This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Fad Camp is a comedy podcast about the ridiculousness of fad diets and diet culture, hosted by me, Grace Mulvey.
And me, Connor Dowling. If you have a body of any kind, chances are you've crossed paths with at least one of the bizarre diet trends we cover in our show.
And between me and Connor, we have done nearly every fad diet there is.
Juice cleansing.
Fasting.
The potato diet.
Which is actually a real diet, by the way, and we don't recommend it.
So join us as we try to make sense of the madness that is diet culture.
Find Fad Camp everywhere you get your podcasts and make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Fad Camp Podcast.
Welcome back to Rap Chat. I'm your host, Mark Monks, and today I'm joined by a very talented writer, director, and actor, Baz Black. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Firstly, I'd like to congratulate you on your directorial debut, Dublin Crust. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. We got it there in the end. A bit stressful, but yeah, I'm just glad to see it and over the finish line.
Can I ask, way back in, kind of cast your mind back way back into like, the pre-production phase, what was the kind of writing kind of process that you had for Dublin Crust?
Well, it actually started out as a short, a fully formed short. I've done five or six shorts, and that was going to be another one. I actually entered it into the Actor as Creator, the Screen Ireland Bow Street thing. Got rejected, of course. So threw my toys out of the pram and was never going to make a movie again.
Yeah.
But then it was my wife, she was saying, you know, are we going to go ahead and do it? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And basically she said that because of the topic, it is my life. Like, I was a punk drummer in a band. It's quite personal. She was like, no, you need, this needs to be your feature. And it was only when she said that, I was like, oh, actually, okay. I started changing it up and turning it into a feature. So took some elements that I had in the short, but pretty much changed a lot of it, and just started the writing process, and it was quite organic, the writing process, because it's not based fully on true life, but like I said, it is my world. I was a punk drummer, and I loosely based it on a notorious punk band that I drummed with for 8 years. And from the very start, even with the short, the singer of that band and the guitarist of that band were always going to play themselves, because if you see the film, or if you have the pleasure of meeting them in person, there is nobody that's going to replicate those guys. You just can't do it. Which was a huge risk, because neither of them are working actors. Andy, the guitar player, he's done a little bit, and Eddie's done some, like, you know, podcasts and all that kind of stuff, but he's never actually done acting, so it was a huge risk. But I just knew for the authenticity of the film that it needed those guys to be there. And then Joe Rooney, he completed the band by playing the bass player, Terrence.
Cool. Yeah, Sean Baker style.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, just because of the tone of the film, I just wanted it to be fully authentic. And so the writing process came very naturally. Now, obviously, there is some fictionalized stuff and amped up stuff back and forth, but the root of it was based on that band that I was with.
Cool. Can I ask as well, like, you've directed shorts before, like you've directed Reflection, and was it The Marrow as well directed?
Yeah.
Can I ask, like, was there a huge difference with the big leap to the feature, especially since you were the writer and one of the actors in the film itself?
Yeah, I mean, on Reflection, I wrote and directed it and was in it as well, so I was used to compartmentalizing my brain. And Marrow, then I just directed it, and that was a luxury, just to sit back and be able to direct it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, obviously, anybody that moves onto a feature, you're looking at a whole new beast, you know.
Yeah.
As much as you try to simplify it, it's just everything is thrown at you. Logistics and, you know, crew and acting and funding and just everything. It's a huge beast. So, Yeah, I would say pre-production. Like, we were probably in pre-production for maybe a year.
Yeah.
You know, just ironing everything out. Script-wise, I think I had like 30 drafts of the script, you know, until I finessed it down. And then through that, we were making a plan, you know, to go for funding and working out our logistics and all that side of things. And then I wrote a lot of the parts with people in mind. So I wrote specifically for them, which always helps as a writer because you can just picture them straight away.
Yeah,
and like, I mean, I wrote it for them before I even told them, you know, so I just then I went to them and said, listen, I wrote you this part. Would you be interested?
Yeah.
So that definitely helped. But yeah, juggling everything, it is tough, but that's why when you have a good crew with you, and then like Emma, my wife, she's the producer on the film, and she was incredible at all that stuff, you know, taking the pressure off, because I'm your typical director where I'm like, I hate all the paperwork and all that kind of stuff. I know it has to be done. So yeah, between the two of us, we were pretty much, it was pretty much like an everyday thing, like every day. It just consumes your life, you know, but that's the only way you can do it, especially independently.
Cool. Yeah. I was going to say as well, when I saw the film initially, I got a sense of that, like, you were trying to balance, like, a kind of comedic style with some of the characters, but also very dramatic. Like, it reminded me of kind of, like, a combination of, like, School of Rock and Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler. That's how I kind of saw it when I watched it, which is a bit wacky, but... But what I'm trying to say is, like, how were you able to balance, like, those kind of styles? Because they are quite, like, they do go hand in hand in some aspects, but it's also quite difficult to even kind of...
Definitely, yeah. I mean, because it actually turned out funnier than I thought. So I know that sounds really egotistical, but like, I never really, when I was writing it, I never planned for it to be as just even the reaction the other night at the premiere. And I know like people give it way more at the premiere, but there was literally people crying, laughing and stuff. But I never, like, because I don't like on the nose comedy. I like sarcastic Irish,
dry kind of
dry humor. The commitments or those kind of films. So the comedy, because it does deal with a lot of dark elements, and even through our kind of promotion of the film, people are expecting it to be a full-out comedy, you know. And then a few people were like, oh, like, it's pretty dark in places, you know, because I like the darkness. But I just think that balance and finding the right balance, and I hope that we have found the right balance of it, that it doesn't go too far into the other realm. There's two characters in particular, and they do go like a little bit further than I thought. I was trying to pull them back. but I do think on the balance of it that it does work. Then after, you know, COVID and the misery and all that kind of stuff, even though I love those kind of films, I do want people to enjoy it as well, you know. And the comedic elements doesn't take away from the resonation that you have with the other characters. It's not like it thrown in as a distraction, you know. It's just to break up the heavier topics that are running through the film.
I kind of agree. Like, when I was watching it myself, I felt like it was a nice kind of change of pace, you know, because like when it almost got a bit too kind of sad, then it kind of like, it was like, oh no, here's some more stuff. And it's like, yeah, I like that kind of like that balance. I thought you did it quite well. I suppose my next question is about the locations. Because I heard the locations are wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. total guerrilla filmmaking, you know. So yeah, we did 32 locations in 7 days, so across 3 counties, which is ridiculous. But it didn't start out like that, obviously. I mean, I think originally it was an 8-week shoot, and then it was 6 weeks, and then it was 4 weeks, and it was all down to the funding, you know. And the reason why we planned it like that was this script initially got into the Dublin Screenwriters Festival.
Oh, nice.
And then part of that was getting to pitch to 5 of the big production companies. And 3 of them came back and they loved it. And they were like, wanted to be on board and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And then they were like, okay, so you can't make a film for under $1 million. I was like, cool, you want to give me $1 million? And they were like, no, you need to go to Screen Ireland, get funding, and then we'll come in, you know, and get behind you and all that kind of stuff.
So
and then we put in like 4 applications to Screen Ireland and many other ones, and of course just rejected. So it just dwindled down, and then we just had to really like think outside the box as regards funding. We did a lot of outside the box stuff, and literally begging, borrowing, stealing. And then locations, like I have to say now, the local community, like I live in Dundalk and I'm originally from Drogheda.
Yeah.
So between those two towns, the locations that we got were just incredible. Like, I mean, we got the Dundalk Courthouse.
Yeah.
And they didn't charge us. We got like coffee shop. We got two supermarkets. We got a full hotel. Like convenience stores, we got like a print place, you know, so
yeah.
It really just amps it up. And really those locations, it was some YouTube video, I can't remember what it was, but it was an independent filmmaker and they were talking about how you can make a production or a film to an audience, not to somebody that's in the industry, to an audience, how you can make it feel like it's not low budget.
Yeah.
And that is amping up the locations, keeping the pace moving, because your brain is constantly moving and you don't really have time to think that, oh, you know, if it's two locations, you're like, okay, obviously they didn't know money, it's two locations, they're going back and forth.
Yeah.
But if you just amp up the locations as much as it killed us, it just tricks everyone into thinking, you know, because I've had people coming up to me going, oh my God, like, this is like, how much money did you spend on this,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and stuff
yeah.
like that. But it's just cheating the brain, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like every kind of like low budget film I've seen where like you kind of look at it and it's like, okay, you only managed to get like two locations in and it was obviously because budgetarily wise and even kind of story wise, you're like, when you have those two locations, you kind of have to limit it. But because you had so many kind of locations, it felt like, I just felt a lot more, you feel like you had a lot more freedom, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
That's what I really liked about it. It was, I guess maybe it was like, it was sad, but it was a very kind of feel good. That's what I really liked about it.
Yeah, I mean, I, again, honestly, and I do mean this honestly, and again, it's a premiere, so people like, you know, give it more, but the resonation that I had with people, but like, not the obvious stuff. Now, there's stuff, you know, and it's like people coming up to me and being like, oh, my friend went through this, and, you know, people close to me went through this on the bigger topics.
Yeah.
But it was like the smaller stuff, and it was like them picking out lines. It was people writing down lines from the film on their phone, and you know, and it's like, and there's a bit with Andy with the boss at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I've wanted to say that to my boss for so many years, you know, and these little things, and you know, it'd just be like a line in the film that I would kind of, because I've been looking at it 1,000 times in the edit room,
yeah.
And I, you know, for me, it's kind of, that's been glossed over, and then someone will come up to me and is like, oh, when you said that line, I was just bawling crying. The amount of people crying, which is probably not what you want at a premiere, and a kind of a feel-good film, but I couldn't get over the amount of people crying, you know,
yeah.
Guys, girls, like bawling crying and giving out to me because I was making them cry. Even one of our executive producers, I offered, did he want to see the full script because he's an executive producer, and he's like,
yeah.
No, I'd rather wait and see it in person. And he came up to me and he was angry that I made him cry, you know, giving out to me, like, so
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, to have that resonation in a room with a group of people, from going from the page to everything you went through,
yeah,
to there,
yeah.
It is obviously the ultimate payoff, you know.
Yeah, honestly, that's like, it's a dream come true when you like have your film like that and it can actually resonate with an audience, especially for like a film that's very kind of like has its own aesthetic, like it's very punk, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I love the film.
That's a nice way of putting it. Like, look, it's not perfect. I mean, I know that, like, you know,
yeah.
It's not perfect, but what we are doing, since you've seen it anyway, we're getting it recolor graded with a 6-time BAFTA winner, and
ooh,
that's, so
nice,
that's going to
nice.
Change the
yeah.
aesthetic of it. And the one that we had there was literally done in 3 days because we had
yeah.
issues and we had to scramble to get it done. And there's loads of there's VFX still to be done on it.
Mm.
And you know, like I said in the speech beforehand, it's not the fully formed
yeah.
part. And then a few comments were even like, oh, there was a few bits where the actors were hanging between each other, and because Emma edited it and it's so sharp and snappy, but it was the day before we were getting the sound mix done on Killian Fitzgerald,
yeah.
and there happened to be 5 tracks that were wild gone, I don't know what the hell, and we were trying to bring them back into the mix, but it'd be on a boom, and they weren't important lines, so we were like, look, just get rid of them for now, and we'll
yeah.
ADR them back in. So that's the, and then people coming up to me, oh, there was a bit of hanging. I was like, I know,
yeah.
It was, you know, so there's all these things that nobody sees behind the scenes
yeah,
that's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, as regards to the aesthetic, it was, I mean, obviously it was running and gunning, like setup times were just, you know, insane. We get away with it a little bit because it's a film about a punk band, you know, a
yeah.
little bit, you know, you can't use that as too much of an excuse, but because
yeah.
it is, now it is a discussion that we had that we didn't want it to look perfect anyway, which thankfully. Because, but you know what I mean? I didn't want it to be really polished.
Yeah.
Originally, actually, we wanted to shoot on vintage lenses. Ooh. But again, budget.
Yeah.
Pistol did a great job with that, actually, with the cutout. Did you watch that TV series with Danny Boyle?
His new one? No, I haven't yet.
It's actually...
I want to watch this.
Yeah, I wanted to hate it because I was like, I'd read a few reviews and, you know, they glossed over. It's actually really, really good.
Oh, nice,
and they do these kind of cutaway, they're like establishing shots of old London, but they shoot them on vintage lenses.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, to give it that kind of look. Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah,
so
yeah,
they use three different styles of cameras through it, and it actually works really, really well. And I was like, oh, that's exactly what I initially wanted for
like my friend Mig, he's a DP. When he uses his Komodo Red, he usually shoots on these Leica lenses that are quite vintage, and I love the look of them. He always like that look is so like cool. Like
it's lovely. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I was going to say as well, when you're shooting Dublin Crust, you stuck mainly a lot with the same crew that you've worked with on other shorts. With the transition to a feature, was it just like, oh, you know, just back to normal, you know, just like I'm comfortable with everyone? Or is it because of that high level stress, there was a bit of tension? Was it just like, you know...
No, I mean, I have to say, like, the crew were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And because I worked with them before, obviously there's a trust there.
Mm.
And I did warn everybody, cast and crew, I said, listen, guys, this is going to be absolutely insane, hectic. And I basically said, either you're in or you're out. And if you're out, it's absolutely fine. Because this is going to be the way it is. Because we know money, because of the locations we were tied in, because of the, like, the bigger actors that, time-wise, this is the only time that we have with them. We have to do it this way. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, as regards to the crew, they were amazing. Now again, there was another guy that I had on board if we had got funding. But he's massive money and he's amazing. but that's who we had.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
when the funding didn't come through, we had to adapt. And the guys knew that from the start.
Yeah.
They were still going to be on the crew, just not as the main DOP, you know?
Yeah.
But stress levels, and they were exhausted, but they just kept the morale up, and, you know, we were a bit delirious by the end of it, you know, but there was no major meltdowns, blowouts, anything like that.
Yeah,
and
cool,
the speed that those guys can set up is ridiculous, because if they hadn't, we just wouldn't have gotten
the
film
done. Like,
yeah,
Jesus,
it was like... just like, it was absolutely, yeah, just crazy. Just don't tell Equity. We were doing it in shifts, don't worry. I did 2 days straight, no sleep, but you know.
God, yeah.
That
was like when I worked on Hell Week. It was like, the prime, like, kind of like, I suppose it'd be like your issue, be like the perfect example of controlled chaos.
Yeah.
Just like that kind of, like, you know?
Yeah.
And I do love that, but at the same time, it's like, I have no sleep.
No, that's it. And, and it was controlled chaos, but the planning was meticulously down to the last minute, because if it wasn't,
oh God, yeah,
you're gone. You know, it just wasn't happening. One of the biggest blows aesthetically to the whole film. And it does kind of work, I suppose. But we had like a car showroom, like a proper car showroom for Jeremy, who plays the used car salesman.
Yeah.
We had that all squared away, booked, and it was on a Sunday. And I was standing outside with 40 cast and crew, all ready to go. Half an hour went by, an hour went by, never showed up. Ringing, calling, emailing, nothing. And so then we were like, okay, so in those situations, either you adapt or you just crumble. And this is indie filmmaking. You can't just start freaking out and stressing out, because then your whole cast and crew starts feeling
that. Yeah, exactly.
So
the
morale just, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, my brother owns We Print, a big printing shop in Drogheda. Rang him, give us the keys, get in there. I mean, as regards Recce, it was literally like, right, where can we shoot this? You know, and there was offices upstairs. And then you'll see in the film, like the used car sales lot is just the car park. We just stuck random for sale signs on all the cars that were parked there and hoped they weren't coming back. But it suits the film, because Jeremy, as you've seen, is, you know, this your typical used car salesman. So maybe in hindsight, putting him in a glossy, nice showroom mightn't have fit his character.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that was just one of the big locations that we lost, you know. Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes in the film was your kind of backstory when it came to the heist.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I thought the whole way it was shot was fantastic. I thought it was really funny. And that was kind of like just bringing it back to kind of like balancing the kind of comedic with even like action as well. Like I thought, like, that whole scene was really kind of like well edited and well kind of like shot to like give you that kind of like sense of like, oh, what's gonna happen, you know? And and then like stuff happens, like, ah,
like, yeah. Well, like that's my favorite scene in the whole film, not just because I'm in it, but but I love the editing back and forth because Rose Henderson is playing the shopkeeper, and I just love going from the car back to the shop, back to the shop, and you know, mixing that, you know, heightened drama of the heist but back out to the car and then back and forth. So I love that kind of style in any film.
Yeah.
But that is aesthetically, and that's that is one of my favorite scenes. And then the chase bit that we did in it was adding a bit of, you know, action and a bit of movement to it as well. But yeah, that would definitely be one of my favorite.
When you were kind of shooting it, I suppose, what was your like kind of inspirations? Like what kind of like research did you go kind of into when you were shooting this film? I know you were saying a lot of it was based on, not a lot of it, but some of it was based on your like your life as a drummer, as in a band. But like, was there any other kind of inspiration that you had to kind of make it more stylistic? Or,
well, actually, that robbery scene you were talking about, this is what I mean. So Emma, my wife, was a singer in a band which I won't name, but their drummer did that and ended up in prison.
Oh, really?
So that's where that whole, you know, story and that backstory for Bonehead came from. So there's so much of that in the film that, yes, it is obviously heightened drama, but so much of it, and it's the stuff that you would think is, oh, well, that's just fiction, and it's like, no, that actually happened. And then, like, I mean, there is aspects of, you know, it's one of those films, isn't it, that you can't say too much because you don't want to give too much away.
Oh,
you know what
God,
I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like one of the topics I can say is homelessness. So I met with the Red Door charity in Drogheda, and I had liaison meetings with them and trying to, you know, bring it across it authentic and listening to the stories and, you know, bringing that aspect to it. There's another big topic in the film which I also did the same. I just won't mention that now. And so yeah, and then like just in general, I'm such a massive movie lover. But like Shane Meadows would be, you know, like This Is England, that kind of style,
gritty,
kind of working class, getting down into the dredges of that working class, you know, that authenticity where, you
kind of like the UK version of Shameless in a sense.
Pretty much,
Something like that.
So it's just, and the whole film, you can have your comedy, you can have your action, you can have your this and that, but it just does not work if you don't invest in the characters. And that's what I try to do with each character, that they all have their own resonation of their arc, you know. They're not just there as token people, you know.
That's just one-dimensional,
just one-dimensional. And there's and it is really layered, the script. And it's one of those films, and this is just purely because I love watching films like this. So if you were to go back now and watch Dublin Crust again with what you know now, it would be a completely different film. So there's like loads of layers, and there's like little hints, and you're like, oh, that's why that, and that's why this, and that's why that. And I just love that, and there's loads of symbolism of stuff that you might pick up on as well. So that was important to me. But yeah, if you don't invest in the characters, and you don't need to like punk to like this film. It's about a punk band. There's punk music in it, but that's secondary. It's about these characters, and it's about retribution, you know. It's about retribution of character. And basically, you know, the synopsis is that it's 10 years after the band have split up. Bonehead, who I play the drummer, comes out of prison, and he wants to reform the band for one last reunion show. And that's the core side of it. And then there's all the turmoil that goes along with that.
And the relationship between other bandmates.
Where they are in their life and what's going on with them. And then, you know, it's, they realise that music was the only thing that was the glue in their lives. And they don't even realise it until they want to reform. And then the singer, he absolutely hates me because it was my fault that the band broke up. And then it's all about, you know, my intentions. Are they pure for getting the band back together? Are they selfish? Or like, what is my reasoning for
it's
that?
It's good. I like that, because like films like that where they pose a question, they make the audience kind of question the characters. And I love that about certain films. And I feel like Dublin Crust did it quite well. I really do genuinely think that.
I hear I'll slip you that 20 now.
But like, yeah, like I just think, like, I think the writing of it, like, I loved it. Like, I genuinely did. I thought the relationship between the different characters felt really realistic. Like, it felt like they're actual characters, you know? And, like, even when you're saying with the different stories that you, like, were inspired by to, like, write it in, like, they felt like it fit so well into the film because it's about a punk band, you know, like punk rock and roll. Everyone knows the whole kind of thing, do you know?
Yeah.
And also, another huge thing I love about it was the actual music itself. I thought the soundtrack was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, we are so lucky. Like, yeah. So, like, Cillian Fitzgerald is doing the sound mix. When we finished on that day, he was like, "Baz, I have to ask you, like, how much have you paid in royalties to get these massive bands?" And I was like, "None of them are massive bands, like." Well, Paranoid Visions, they've been going for 40 years. They'd probably be the biggest band that are on there. Every other band, I either gigged with them through the years, or Eddie, the singer who plays the singer in Dublin Crust, he would know a lot of them, and he recommended me some bands. We used three of the Simpos music, and that was literally me just on YouTube, Irish punk bands, right? And this video came up. Yeah. And it was the song that we use in the big bar fight scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, who are these guys? They're like, they just had this like hook and melody, and the video was so good. And they yeah. they kind of look like, sorry Simpos, but they kind of look like scumbags, but they're punks. And yeah. I was like, I love that. They kind of look like Mickey who's in the film, yeah, you know, that kind of look. And I was like, oh wow, this is, but we use three of their songs. We use, you know, opening credits, pub scene, and the big chase scene.
Yeah.
And I just love that band. And, but all the music, I think, yeah, it does complement the scenes. And then there's music in it that shouldn't belong in a punk film. Did you notice that? Like,
yes. There's like, when there's more kind of like dramatic scenes in it, like it didn't, like it wasn't the kind of like rush nature or like, you know, like that kind of thing of the punk, like punk music. I'm not a punk fan, by the way. So that's why I'm poorly describing everything. But anyway, like the scenes where, I don't want to spoil anything, but the scenes when there was a character, when we see them like in their dump, like down in the dumps, and like when you have the music there, like it's quite somber, it's quite sad, and like it fits so well. Like, I didn't think of, like, when I was watching it, I was like, I don't know if this is gonna fit, but then like when I watched the whole kind of film overall, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it worked overall as like a complete work, you know?
Okay, yeah, because I mean there's a bit under the bridge, and it's a grime track. It's like a rap grime track, and because we had that actually as sad music, and I was like, oh, sick of the sad music, let's put something in there. But it's pure grime, and and there's, you know, this is, again, this is pure indie filmmaking. So we are shooting under the bridge. It's famous in Drogheda for graffiti, Alder Graffiti, and they do the national competitions there every year. But there happened to be a graffiti artist, and he was working on something, and my AD came up to me and was like, oh, Baz, will I ask him, does he mind moving while we're shooting? I was like, ask him, does he mind being in the film? Like, capitalize on that. And he is in the film. So it looks like, you know, we have this guy. And then the grime music just matches perfectly, because I walk up to him, and then the music is playing fully, and then it transitions to, it's coming out of his boombox, you know, for the sound to match. So, yeah, there's a few bits of music that's in there that shouldn't belong in a punk film. But again, I like pushing that boundary on that side, you know.
It's that kind of like, the detail within the image itself when you're shooting, that's what I love. Like one of my favorite films is like Kira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, and like throughout that film, like even in the wide shots, there's so much detail and so much like that you don't need, like sometimes you don't even notice it until you rewatch it again. That's another thing with Dublin Crust, where like throughout the film, like you have different shots, and like there's so much filled in with that shot, even like even the scene in the cafe with your character and then
Tracy.
Yeah. Sorry, someone. I'm terrible with names. Yeah. But that scene, like, there's so much kind of like filled in with that, and it just I just completely agree. I think it works really, really well. I was gonna say as well, with going back to writing real quick. I know a lot of people, when they're writing, they suffer from writer's block. I've suffered from writer's block when I'm writing my own little shorts. Was there many like hurdles you had to jump over throughout the film when you were kind of like writing it up? Or was it just like you said before with the inspirations, this is a cool story, I can see if I can kind of like blend this in and see if that works?
Yeah, I mean, that one in particular, it was quite organic. because I knew who I was writing about and I knew that world, you know, it wasn't as if I was having to go research it, you know, and like trying to find inspiration there. But and then I'd start writing and I'd kind of remember another story or another character that used to be around that scene at that time. I suppose just structurally it was finding that balance of, you know, the tones in it, because it's quite heavy, and you know, then the comedy aspect of it, that was probably the most difficult, and I like reshuffled it quite a bit. Even we reshuffled in the edit room then, you know, we broke up some scenes and brought it back and forward and stuff like that. But no, I think like it was, and now having said that, like I think I did 30 drafts or something like that, and it, you know, the story changed quite a bit every time, and it was just making sure that the character development was there for the audience. I look, the number one mistake in any film, and there is just movies that you go to see that are brain dead entertainment. That's fine. Okay, I understand that. But
popcorn movies, essentially.
Just popcorn movies, yeah. And okay, I get that. But any film that you walk away and you don't care whether they live, they die, they succeed, they fail, you just walk away and you're just like, ah, you know, whatever. I think that's a failure. And that starts with the script, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes you don't realise why you walk away with that feeling. You're just, you kind of feel a bit shortchanged. I'm after investing an hour and a half of my life here, and then the character payoff, whatever that may be, is not there.
It's not satisfying.
It's just not satisfying, And you watch so many movies like that. So just for me, and again, it's because of the kind of films that I like, that was just super, super important that you were going to, even if you hated them, that's a feeling, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just not this neutral.
Feeling. It's just like, God, like, they're there. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
And it's just whatever. Oh, that was cool. You know, it's that's not enough, really.
No,
you know?
Not at all. I completely agree. Like, I love films that have a bit of substance to it. Like, no matter how simple the story is, or even how, like, second, like, out of this world or bonkers the story is, as long as it, like, you're able to kind of connect with characters and you're able to kind of write a really decent character arc, I couldn't really care like what kind of like what direction the story goes. Like I always have that character that I identify with, and I think with Dublin Crust there's so many different characters, like you give so many different characters like background, that it just like it's hard not to like kind of give it
feel something. And that's what I mean, like it's not going to be for everybody and everybody's going to have their opinion on it, but just like the other night in the premiere, that you know, that it had enough depth to make people cry, is whatever character you're invested in, that's an investment, you know, like
exactly.
So if you can do that, and I even had that at the scripts phase, people who read the script, I had like five or six people that were, you know, emotionally invested into it and crying or whatever it was, you know, so I was like, okay, so if I can take that and put that into the film, then we have something here, you know. So just the payoff of you investing in these characters needs to be there, and that can be a happy feeling as well. It doesn't have to be you know, sad or crying or anything like that.
Are you relieved that the whole thing's done? Is it like big weight off your shoulders?
Well, it's not done, that's the problem. We got it to the screening, and now, like I said, recolor grading, we're going back into the edit room, we still have VFX to do. Feels like it's never going to be done. But yeah, I am relieved that we've got it. And I mean, we've gotten it to this point in 9 months from shoot to here. So for a feature film, editing wise and everything, that's pretty good going, you know. So yeah, I am relieved that we have some kind of template to work with. We just need to finesse what we have now, you know. And then we have some interest. So we just need to make sure that we produce the best version that we can when we go that next step further next year.
So there's no confirmed release date yet?
No, not really. We're just kind of keeping our options open there. Like I said, we do have interest, and we'll see what direction they want to go in. There was a big producer at the premiere the other night, and he was very impressed.
Nice.
So much so that he's already pushed us out there, and you know, he kind of stuck to his word again. You know, you talk to these people at the end, they're just being nice or whatever, but literally the next
day, shake hands, like, oh, how's it going?
Next day, he was like on the ball. So, we'll just see what happens. And you know, you would love it to just be, I'm not comparing it in any shape or form, but you know, like Roddy Doyle, but just sitting in that world of an Irish Like that producer said, he hasn't seen an authentic movie, Irish movie like that, in a decade.
Yeah.
You know, so he was like, that kind of style of film. So that was a huge compliment. So if we can just get that to the audiences, I think overall they will enjoy a story like that.
Yeah, know? I think so too. Yeah. I think purely the fact that like it's not just a I suppose punk kind of film. Like there's characters there. You know, it's well written. The music's fantastic. It's shot really well. Like I feel like people are gonna resonate like with that. It's not just like another kind of musical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
Yeah, just different kinds of audiences and stuff like that. And like even, you know, my dad is in his 70s. Like he was pissing himself laughing, you know, and just to see that. I know it's my dad or whatever, but he was even saying, oh, I just didn't expect it to be that funny or, you know. But like that's, and it could be just an Irish thing, but any films like that, Intermission, The Van, and we just find it hilarious because that's our Irish humour.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, yeah.
It might not translate outside the world, but I don't really care. I honestly don't care, you know. If just even if the Irish audience react to it like that, then I'd be happy. Yeah.
I suppose my last question is, from filming this now, have you had any like proper learning experiences now from your first feature that you know that you're not going to do now with your next one?
Yeah, just don't do it again. 100%. And I could never do what we did like that again. I couldn't. It took me 2 months to recover afterwards, and I'm sure a lot of the crew will tell you the same. It was just manic. I'm glad we did it and it was great and we have the memories and we have the film, but to do that again the way we did it, no, not a chance. So getting back to the funding, I mean, like, as I said, we went outside the box. So, well, we did a crowdfunder. And that was usually disappointing. It's, you know, everybody's, oh, it's amazing, you're making a film. Yeah. And then when it comes to people getting behind you, as I'm sure you've heard from so many filmmakers, there's just tumbleweed. But then all our applications, you know, getting rejected. And then we went outside the box as regards getting product placement in it. I mean, for the robbery, we needed a van anyway. And then we went to like Sheds Direct and they sponsored like that. And I was like, okay, we win-win, you know. And literally like there was 1 week I sent 172 emails, every shop, every connection, whether it was a location or they could give us something in some shape or form, or going after like executive producers that were invested into indie filmmaking and just scrambling just to get enough, just to get it done. Everybody got paid, which I'm super proud of. That was one thing from the very start. We crucified ourselves a little bit though, because we thought we would get some form of funding.
Yeah.
And actually the Arts Council, they rejected us twice, and this is me being tenacious. I got on to the local TDs and I got them to write a letter on my behalf, and next day they gave us, you know.
Nice,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So this, it's just never give up, don't take no for an answer. Exactly, just keep hounding them, because it's just too easy for people to say no. I broke the cardinal rule and put shit ton of my own money into it, so it was either that or it wasn't going to get done. But we crucified ourselves as regards, we kind of promised everybody, you know, this pay, because we thought we'd get some fun, and then we didn't, and we had to you know, honor our
commitment.
So learning curve then, it would be to, for the next one, definitely that we would need to have the funding in place, and not do 32 locations in 7 days and probably do the lazy man's, well, the one I'm writing now is the lazy man's filmmaker, where it's one location, 5 actors, you know, small crew. It's like a horror thriller that I'm writing.
Nice,
so
yeah, nice.
completely different than Dublin Crust. And that's what I like as well. I don't want to make the same film again. I've done Double Cross and move on, you know.
You've done your like personal film now.
Yeah.
You can do all the wacky stuff now.
Do all the, because I love so many different styles of film. So,
yeah, me too.
I wouldn't like to try and replicate that as well. Trying to replicate that energy would be very hard, you know. So, it'll be getting the funding in place, longer shoot, a lot more chilled out, and just a lot more structure. But like I said, I'm glad we did it. If we can do that for what we had and the way we did it and everything like that, I think it will make the journey a lot easier down the road then.
Yeah, amazing. Well, Baz, it was fantastic chatting with you on Rapshot.
Thanks very much for having me.
No worries.
Yeah.
And we'll chat to you soon.
Nice one. Thanks, man.